What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Johnny Mac here. Just wanted to give you a heads up that if you are looking for a community that is open to discussion as far as mentorship, conservation, the wild, becoming a better person, and all of that, there is a group for you on Facebook, and it is called Soul Seekers. Soul Seekers, we are all about making ourselves a better person. We're all about making sure hunting lasts for generations to come and encouraging people to get plugged in. Whether you are someone who has something to give or someone who needs to soak it up like a sponge, this is a community for you, and I strongly encourage you that if you're on Facebook to join Soul Seekers, and if you're not on Facebook, hop on there just for that group. It is only going to be as powerful as we all make it. And so just remember that life happens for you. It doesn't happen to you. And that you can't outgive good. You can't outgive good, people. I want you to understand that. And I want you to believe it. Because when we believe that and we lead with courage and we lead with intention, lives are changed. Lives are transformed. Just like on this podcast, Transformation Through Primal Adventure. Be blessed. Enjoy this episode. Talk soon. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack. Through this podcast, I'm on a mission to transform lives through primal adventure and to spread my mission of mentorship is conservation. This podcast is powered by Washington Backcountry, a resource for all hunters, both new and old. To find out more about Washington Backcountry, go to wabackcountry.com or search for Washington Backcountry on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. The Soulful Hunter Podcast is also proudly presented by T&K Hunting Gear. If you haven't heard about T&K, then it's about time you do. I've been using T&K gear out in the field and on hunts and have fallen in love with their stuff. T&K is veteran-owned and 100% made in America using only American-made products. All their gear is covered under a lifetime warranty with no questions asked. If it breaks or fails, they will fix it or replace it for free. T&K is your resource for bino harnesses, bow slings, and a lot more amazing gear. For more information about T&K hunting gear, go to tnkhunting.com. Or search for them on Facebook and Instagram. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Read them on and stay soulful. The Soulful Hunter Podcast is also proudly presented by the Crazy Elk Company. Based out of the state of Washington with products made in America, they are providing solutions with gear to problems you didn't even know you had. Their tag wallet is one of those solutions, and I had the pleasure of using it on all of my hunts this last year, and it is now a mainstay in my kill kit. The Tag Wallet is a water-resistant zippered pouch that comes with its own reusable zip ties to safely and securely store your notch tag for quick and easy access. For more information, go to crazyelkcompany.com and use the code SOULFUL with a capital S to save 20% at checkout. Be blessed, everyone, and as always, stay soulful. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack. Tonight, I got a just amazing guest, Andy Kelso, the president of the Washington Wild Sheep Foundation, and someone who I had the pleasure of meeting in person back when he came to one of the Washington Backcountry winter events and just got an opportunity to hear all about what Andy stands for and also what the Washington Wild Sheep Foundation is all about. I think as a newer hunter, I want to know all about these different conservation organizations and critter clubs and all these different things that give back to hunting and to these animals and public places and public things, wild things. And yet, how do you learn about them if you have no experience and no direction? I mean, it's hard enough just to get started into hunting, let alone for somebody to then want to identify wild sheep as the animal that they want to support the most. We have Andy is going to be talking to us all about this and his journey into what led him being hooked to supporting the wild sheep. Andy, thank you so much for joining us for an episode.
Thanks, Johnny. Appreciate it. I'm super happy to be here. I'm really happy to have the opportunity to sit and chat with you and get a message out to your listeners about wild sheep. I mean, like you said, it's a rare opportunity to hunt wild sheep. You know, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Ducks Unlimited, all those organizations. You know, that's something you can go out and do every year. You know, and if you're hunting different states, you can do it multiple times a year. Where sheep's just definitely in a different realm, and the opportunity to hunt them is so rare that, you know, these organizations, you know, we just don't have the draw that, you know, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has. My personal journey is kind of a little bit of a stretch. I was born and raised in the Midwest and hadn't really never hunted out west. I had hunted a little bit on here on the west side for blacktail and had some success doing that, but didn't really have a lot of exposure to the general Western style of hunting. You know, fast forward past my Army days, I get out of the Army. I get my current job and, you know, a little bit of stability. And so I start applying for, you know, these tags that, you know, these once in a lifetime tags, really putting in and not really thinking much about drawing. Thought maybe, you know, someday I'd draw a mountain goat tag or something like that. You know, at that point in time, mountain goat tags weren't even once in a lifetime. They're definitely have been more restricted now. You know, on my fourth year of applying, lo and behold, I draw, you know, one of the premier tags here in Washington State, the Squaw Cane tag. It was the first year that had ever actually even been open. They had transplanted sheep in there in 1969, and fast forward to 1999 when I drew the tag and I had that very first tag. I'll be honest, I kind of floundered a little bit. I was a little bit overwhelmed, a little bit scared. I didn't really know how to tackle that. One thing that's really cool about drawing these once in a lifetime tags, though, is people are really open and willing to share information. It's, you know, it's not like somebody's secret deer spot, right? You know, so I talked with a few people, and you know, one guy at work that had hunted sheep was a guy that had hunted Dall sheep up in Northwest Territories. Other than that, I didn't know anybody that hunted sheep. So put some calls into the Fish and Wildlife Department. The local office in Wenatchee there was super helpful. They took me out, showed me some places, and met one of the local guys there who was a taxidermist. He's now actually one of my really good friends. And you know, they kind of went out and showed me a few things, and I hunted for a few days by myself. And very first time I went out scouting, I'm sitting on top of a mountain, pair of cheap binoculars, and looking at all this vast country and thinking, how in the world am I going to find a sheep in all of this? I mean, one little animal in all of this, I couldn't quite fathom it. But you know, I guess just get to work, I thought. So I put the binoculars up, started looking, and lo and behold, within a couple of minutes, I find my first sheep, and it was kind of all downhill from there. I was hooked for sure. Ended up killing a great ram. The day that I killed it, my buddy Dan happened to be with me. He's the taxidermist in Wenatchee, and that kind of started a journey for me. I've always been kind of a person that wants to give back, and but I didn't really know how to do that. Kind of out of the blue, I got a call from the past president then FNAWS, Foundation for North American Wild Sheep, Jerry Tyrell. And that's kind of how I got introduced into the sheep world. He asked me to, you know, maybe come in and sit on some meetings and stuff like that. So that's kind of how my general introduction into the Wild Sheep Foundation went. It was just kind of a chance tag, and you know, and somebody that's in the sheep conservation business reaching out to me and putting a little bit of faith in me, and then you know, eventually coming on, and here we go. That's you know, 20 years ago almost. So
time flies. I'll tell you this: I had the opportunity this last year to let's see. I was hunting the Entiat unit over in Eastern Washington. And when I was hiking up this ridge early morning in pitch black, I wanted to make it up into this bowl, and just, you know, there's something special and magical as you're climbing those cliffs by the Columbia River. And we get up there and sunlight hits the hillside and so slowly working. And all of a sudden this, and this charge started happening and looked up this hill and it was a big old ram. And apparently it was breeding season for these rams in October. And it was just like putting on a show. And I was like, holy smokes. That was my first real experience of seeing a ram out in the wild and being like, okay, I see the power of these things and how majestic that they truly are.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I guess it's kind of one of those things where, you know, there's people that have hunted sheep and just don't get bitten by the bug, but, man, I got it bad. So, yeah, they are so special. They are very majestic and, you know, seeing them in a rut like that when they get a little crazy and then start knocking heads and, you know, they kind of lose a little bit of fear. Yeah, it's amazing, amazing sight. So
I love it. Okay. So here you are, your first sheep hunt was in what is considered probably what the best unit in the state of Washington. And didn't it actually a world record sheep come out of the Swaucane unit?
Yeah, they did. One of a local guy there actually, his name's Aaron. He killed a fantastic ram there several years after my ram. I don't remember the score on that ram off the top of my head, but yeah, world record ram. So.
Man, so incredible. Okay, so here you are. You're out of the military. By the way, thank you for your service. That's a thing that I think it goes more often unnoticed and very little gratitude is given to those who are willing to lay down their life or give up their other civilian life to serve and to protect this nation. So thank you so much, Andy, for that.
Thank you.
It means a lot, man. I want to acknowledge you for that. So here you are. You kill a sheep. You're like, wow, this is pretty cool. I had a buddy or a guy reach out to you about the Sheep Foundation. And then what? What really captivated you? What was it that was like, okay, I want to get involved to make sure that these are an animal that lasts for generations to come and that people can get involved with and really be impacted by, not just like driving down the road and be like, oh, okay, there's a sheep. It's like, why do people need to care about wild sheep?
So that experience for me set a lot of things in motion. It was such a special experience for me, and I understood the rarity of it. And I think that's one thing that really, really kind of caught me is this is something that not very many people get to do. I mean, there's only a handful of people that will ever get to do this in their entire life. I had such a good time doing it. I was so moved by doing it that I want as many people to experience that as possible. And, you know, with all the limiting factors around sheep, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but with all those limiting factors, there's not very many people that get to do it. So when I started getting involved, I understood the passion surrounding wild sheep and all these other people that were already involved with Wild Sheep Foundation, how passionate they were. And it's really quite contagious. If you go down to Reno, down to the sheep show down there, you know, it is one of the most amazing experiences because there's all these people and all this energy surrounding this. You know, you go to the Lesson One Club, you know, events and stuff like that. And it's super, super amazing. And it's really interesting to see how much people are willing to put into this one species that is just kind of special and rare.
Yeah. Give the listeners a little bit more. What is the Lesson One Club? Because I know what it is, but what does that actually represent?
So what Lesson Than One Club is something that actually kind of had a genesis here in Washington. So it's basically a program that the National Wild Sheep Foundation has put together, and it's an opportunity for people to go on sheep hunts. So they go out and they solicit donations and they get these sheep hunts. I think they usually have about five of them. And they have kind of this group gathering. It's kind of a beer fest kind of thing. And they give these sheep hunts away. So basically you have to be a member of the Wild Sheep Foundation. You have to be a member of the Less Than One Club, and it's very attainable. So I think it's like a $25 entry fee into the Less Than One Club. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's close. And an annual membership through Wild Sheep Foundation is pretty reasonable as well. And then they give these hunts away. So you have to be in attendance down in Reno. We have something similar that we started here, and that's our life member giveaway. Basically, our rules are very simple. You have to be a life member of the Washington chapter. You don't even have to be a member of National. And you have to be in attendance at our banquet in person. Last 2 years, we haven't obviously been able to have that because of COVID. We're actually in the middle of doing an online auction right now.
And we'll get to that a little bit later in this episode.
Yeah, you bet. So the Less Than One, our life member giveaway, actually, and a lot of the chapters have adopted similar giveaways. Idaho, Wyoming, I know off the top of my head, those two have life member giveaways. But these are opportunities for folks to be able to dream and have a chance at a very good sheep hunt, you know, very quality, high quality sheep hunt, and a great experience. So it's a way to recruit people into the fold of wild sheep. We talked about it earlier. Not very many people get to draw those tags, but anybody can dream about going. That's one of the ways that somebody can kind of get their foot in the door.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm actually on your guys' website right now. Listeners, for those of you who are in the state of Washington, if you go to washingtonwsf.org, that is the Washington Wild Sheep Foundation's website. And from there, you can click on membership and you can see that a lifetime membership for the state of Washington Foundation is only $500, which I think for a lifetime membership, it is a killer deal, especially if that also provides you an opportunity to shorten your gap of potentially getting to hunt one. One question I have before we even dive into the whole concept of sheep hunting is, traditionally, when people think sheep, they think lamb, and when they eat lamb, it's more of a fatty type meat. What is wild sheep meat like? Is it a fatty meat, or is it super lean? From experience,
it is super lean. Yeah, it is super lean. And if you've ever had mutton, domestic mutton, not necessarily lamb, but kind of the more stronger flavored mutton, it's pretty similar to that. It can vary greatly. I was fortunate to be able to harvest a doll sheep back in 2003, and that was some of the best meat I've ever had. All of it tasted like it had sugar added into it. It's very, very sweet meat. My Washington Cali, honestly, not that great. It was kind of sagey, but it was an old ram, and it kind of had that sagey taste to it. So, but yeah, it's all edible.
So like an old mule deer, pretty much.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I love it. Okay. So when we are talking Wild Sheep Foundation and just wild sheep in general, does it cover all the different sheeps? Is it the doll sheep, the stone sheep, desert ram? Is that, or what are the different categories of sheep that people would typically skip over and not understand that these are what we can hunt and then what are in the state of Washington?
Yeah, that's good. So we'll break it down. We'll start, we'll go north to south. So up north, Northwest Territories, Alaska, even in Yukon, you have doll sheep up there. So those are the pure white ones. You move a little further south into British Columbia, southern Yukon, you have stone sheep. They're very similar to the doll sheep in that they are a thin horn. They're a thin horn sheep, but they're darker in color, and they can range anywhere from, with a little bit of salt and pepper gray onto them to almost a grayish black. And then you come down further south in British Columbia and into the United States. And there's bighorn sheep. That's kind of the primary species we have here. And that's broken down into two subcategories. Boone and Crockett all calls them bighorn sheep. Doesn't matter. But there is a California subspecies to that. That's what we primarily have here in Washington. The ones that you saw over in the INIAT, those were California bighorn sheep. Down in the southeast corner of the state, we have Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep. And those are kind of throughout the West as well. You go, you know, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, those are all Rockies. Californians are spread out kind of between Washington, Idaho, Oregon, a little bit Nevada as well. You continue further south, and that's where you get into the desert bighorn sheep country. So, you know, Nevada, Utah, Arizona, Mexico, Texas, California, those are states that have or places that have desert bighorn sheep.
Okay.
So, yeah. So there's the Grand Slam of North American sheep. And that's basically your Rocky, your Stone, Dull, and Desert. That's kind of the Grand Slam.
And to do a Grand Slam on sheep hunts when you're already talking about something that's very hard to get, that takes a lot of playing the game correctly in order to even be able to pursue that, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Yeah. You know, I mean, and for a pretty good reason, you know, sheep hunting kind of has a reputation as a rich man's sport. You know, I kind of beg a little bit of differ there. And the fact that I know, you know, school teacher that has his grand slam, small business owners that have their grand slam, construction workers that have their grand slam. So it is definitely doable. I've got 3 out of 4. I'm waiting on that desert sheep tag. But, you know, like you said, I play the game. I apply in every state minus California that has desert sheep. You know, I buy a lot of raffle tickets, you know, when there's an opportunity to win one, like this year, our brothers and sisters over in Idaho, they're going to be giving away a desert sheep for their life member hunt. So, yeah, you betcha I'm going to be over at that banquet this year. So.
That is so awesome. Okay. So here it is, the sheep. And a lot of people don't understand the difference between why it's so important to have a boundary between domestic sheep and wild sheep. And so why don't you break that down? Because this is something that when I heard you speak at one of our events 2 years ago, I was blown away. And I was like, dude, I had no idea. I feel like, and without giving it away, but I feel like it's a little bit of the same thing of like why they keep bison or buffalo away from cattle out in the West. But for those of you who are unfamiliar with that, Andy, go ahead and explain why the separation occurs and why it's so important.
Yeah. So, wild sheep recovery is limited, not by, habitat like most species, right? You know, mule deer winter range is an issue, stuff like that. With wild sheep is disease. And that disease is typically MOV is what we call it for short. It's Mycoplasma ovine pneumoniae. That's the long version. I'll just refer to it as MOV. But basically it's a bacteria that's carried by domestic sheep and domestic goats. Doesn't really hurt them very much. There's some studies that show that, you know, their growth rates are a little bit lower when they have it, the domestics do. But to bighorn sheep, it is fatal. The problem lies in sheep are gregarious. Domestic sheep, wild sheep, they're attracted to each other. They're all of the same species. So they commonly will co-mingle. And when they co-mingle, that's when the domestics will give wild sheep MOV. And it basically, what it does is it paralyzes the cilia in their respiratory system, and they'll catch pneumonia or other diseases, and they basically will die of those other diseases. Much like the flu, there are different strains of MOV. Some of them are fairly mild, and a herd will get them, get over it, and it's not devastating. More often the case it is devastating and it causes all age die-offs. One of the problems is sheep that survive with MOV will pass it on to lambs. So lamb recruitment drops to, their survival rate drops to next to nothing or nothing. So you may have a MOV go through a herd, wipes out 50% of the herd, let's say for easy purposes, it wipes out, 50% of the population of 100. So you're left with 50 sheep. But of those, 25 of them have MOV, carry MOV, survive with MOV. And all those ewes that give birth that spring in May, those lambs drop May, June, and then a few weeks later, they die of MOV. So, it's kind of one of those problems that persists for a very long time. We've had that here in Washington State, actually down in Hell's Canyon, so Washington, Idaho, and Oregon. They had a MOV outbreak there in the 90s, and it lasted for 20 plus years. The population was just kind of a remnant population. There was only a few sheep left. Lamb survival was basically none. So one of the strategies to combat it was to go in and remove those sheep that were positive. So they would capture them, test them, and if they came up positive, they would call them from the herd. Doing this, the herd was so small they were able to do that. And kind of clean out MOV from the herd. And through transplants, they were able to reestablish those herds down in Hell's Canyon. And they're actually doing pretty well. You might have seen floating around a picture of a 202-inch ram. That came out of one of those units that was cleaned up this year. So, it's our state record ram now. And amazing, amazing sheep. And, but we don't have a solution to that. So one of the things that we fund quite heavily is research at Washington State University. They've gained a lot of knowledge around MOV, but we don't have a silver bullet for that thing yet. There's no vaccine for it, So on the domestic side or the wild side. So for now, the only thing that we can really do is try to keep domestic sheep separated from wild sheep. Easier said than done.
That's really interesting because, obviously, and here's one of the issues that lies within hunting and even the outside, the non-hunters looking into hunting, is that people don't really know much about outside of their own personal bubble. People stay within their own personal bubble. I remember when I was 15 taking driver's ed, and they were like, yeah, you're more likely to get in an accident within 10 miles of your home than anywhere else. And I was like, well, that's weird. You know those roads better than any others. And then I was like, oh, but then that makes sense because you know them so well, you kind of just forget about things and you let things happen. I feel like that's hunting in a nutshell, or more like in a bubble. It's like people only know what they know and they don't really like to go outside their bubble to get more information or to learn new things or to experience new things. And so we're just going to stay right here where it's comfortable. And so for my perception of sheep is, you see free range cattle. It's not uncommon to see, cattle guards and, run into cows out in the wild. You don't run into sheep out in the wild very often. And so this concept of domestic sheep and wild sheep intermingling, that sounds very foreign to me. And then you just got done saying, it's like, well, it's a lot harder to do than what it seems like. And so I want to know more about that. Like where is it that this is happening and how is it happening?
So it happens throughout the West. Sometimes there are large wool growing operations, commercial operations. We had an incident in our Quillamine herd this last fall that was exactly that. We have one grower that has grazing allotments, National Forest grazing allotments, throughout the Cascades, on the east slope of the Cascades. One of their sheep got away and got in with some wild sheep down in the Quillamine. An astute off-duty game warden sees this, maybe a police officer, I'm not sure which, sees it, calls in. They lethally remove that domestic sheep. Tested, it tests positive for MOV. the Fish and Wildlife kind of took some pretty drastic measures. And I think they removed like 10 wild sheep from that immediate area there, calling them and testing them. None of them came up positive. So I think in this case, and they monitored those sheep throughout the winter. And there's no clue that they actually were infected. So it looks like we're in the clear there. But you know, it's kind of one of those things that probably just dodged a bullet quite literally there. You know, with the MOV outbreak in there. About 2 weeks later, coughing sheep, which is kind of what the common symptom that's noticeable of MOV is, coughing sheep were found in Clemens Mountain. And that herd got MOV. It has an outbreak there. We don't really know the extent of it yet. We'll find out very soon, you know, as lambing season's kind of really close to us now. We'll kind of find out how bad that is. But yeah, you know, we've had other herds. Our entire Tieton herd had to be lethally removed. What the remnants that didn't get killed by MOV there were called by Fish and Wildlife to prevent them going across the river and getting to the Clemens Mountain herd. So we don't really know the source of those outbreaks, but there's some hobby flocks in there, you know, 4-H sheep, you know, just kind of, you know, people that have a half a dozen sheep, you know, just kind of hobby farms. Those are just as dangerous as anything else. So it's kind of like looking for, you know, a red car, right? You know, gee, I see red cars all the time. Well, yeah, what kind of red car? Oh, I'm looking for a Toyota Corolla. And when you start looking for a red Toyota Corolla, they're everywhere. It's kind of like domestic sheep. If you kind of start looking, you know, as you're out hunting, you're driving to your hunting area, you're driving up to the Eniat, you start looking at some of these little hobby farms and stuff like that, you'll start noticing some pens that have some domestic sheep in them. And that can be very problematic. We're actually funding a project down in the southeast corner of the state, Washington, Idaho, and Oregon. All the game agencies and all the chapters of Wild Sheep Foundation are co-sponsoring a position that's basically an education coordinator. And they'll go out and they'll contact, you know, hobby farms, wool growers, and work with them to get their sheep tested. And, you know, if they do have domestic sheep that have MOV, get those sheep removed and replaced with clean sheep. So it's a kind of a work in progress. We've had that program for a couple of years and we've made some headway with it. And I'd like to see that program expanded.
That's pretty cool. And then that segues very nicely into what I was going to ask you next is a lot of people, when they talk about conservation organizations and critter clubs, they want to know, where does the money go? Where is Wild Sheep Foundation making an impact in our local communities or in our state? And with that, I also want you to address, if you don't mind, what is sheep habitat? Because you're talking about these different locations, and you mentioned earlier about how your sheep, your old ram, was, you know, tasted like sage. What constitutes sheep? Oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank right now. What habitat? There we go.
Yeah. Okay.
What is sheep habitat? And then what is Wild Sheep Foundation doing here in the state of Washington?
All right. Well, let's start off with a habitat question. So that's a great question. So those breaks that you're in along the Columbia River, that is prime Washington habitat. And that's kind of goes throughout Washington, Idaho, and Oregon. A lot of canyon country kind of stuff. Sheep need open spaces. They need to be able to see. They are kind of one of those species that survives with their eyes, and they need lots of open terrain to see. They also need escape cover. So escape cover to them is steep, nasty cliffs that when something's chasing them, whether it be a wolf up north or, you know, whatever, coyotes, whatever, they can go up into the rocks and escape those predators. So that's kind of the really generic version of sheep country, particularly here in Washington, but everywhere. And our sheep are pretty much along the east slope of the Cascades. Yakima Canyon has a bunch of sheep in there. And then down in Hell's Canyon, we also have some other herds up in the northeast corner of the state and north central Washington as well. But as far as where the money goes, I love that question because not all conservation organizations are super forthcoming with that information. I'm happy to tell you where our money goes. And I want to say first of all, members of the Washington Wild Sheep Foundation belong to a group that is our very own 501c3 organization. So the money raised here in Washington stays in Washington. We do fund projects outside of Washington on occasion, but that money does not go back to a national headquarters to be redistributed like a lot of other conservation organizations. So we are a standalone organization. So we fund a lot of things. So, you know, I mentioned disease research. That's one of our top funding things over the years. We've actually put over $2.1 million on the ground since our inception. So, and a lot of that's cooperative funding through Fish and Wildlife, other departments, other states as well. But disease research is a big one. We are very pleased with that. Our founder, Dr. Rocky Crate, was a veterinarian here in Washington. He founded the chapter. And as part of his will, he endowed a fund at WSU. And that fund still continues today. And I do believe that someday we will have that silver bullet, and it will come out of a laboratory, probably out of Washington State University. So some of the other things that we do and have done are transplants. Some of the herds in Washington are attributed directly to our membership money. So I remember kind of when I first got involved with the organization, the herd around Lake Chelan, that was just being reintroduced there. And that was funded by us. Chelan Butte, Manson. We've done other projects, Quillamine. We've transplanted sheep into there. Or we haven't, the Fish and Wildlife has, but you know, we have funded that. Some of the more visible things, the highway 97A where you saw your sheep there, you probably noticed a fence right along the highway there. Kind of a big game fence, right? That was funded by us. Also Wenatchee Valley Sportsmen's Association, but we kind of took the lion's share of the funding on that. We take on the funding for the repairs of that. We got to a point where we were losing, 15 sheep a year on the highway there. So that was a pretty expensive project, but something that we were happy to fund. We've done a lot of research projects, collaring, trapping, transplanting. That trapping and transplanting, sometimes it's in-state, sometimes it's out-of-state. We actually, I talked about those sheep down in Hell's Canyon, that herd got cleaned up. Some of the more recent transplants came from the National Bison Range in Montana. Interestingly enough, within 6 months of Washington receiving those sheep from Montana, they had an MOVI outbreak in Montana and decimated that herd. That herd doesn't really exist anymore. But we have some of their sheep. So maybe, after they get MOVI cleaned up out of there, perhaps we'll be able to give some sheep back to them and they'll have the same genetic strain reintroduced into the same spot. I mean, that would be pretty cool. But that genetic diversity is important. And spreading those sheep around, whether they come from Canada to us or from us to Nevada, it's kind of a big cooperative thing throughout the West. It's not cheap to do. There's two ways to capture. There's the net gunning, and then the trap corral. So trap corral is much cheaper. That's done occasionally. We have a trap corral. On Chelan Butte, got to help out with a capture there a couple years ago. That was pretty cool. Habitat restoration is another one. We just funded a project North Central Washington, our Mount Hall herd. Those sheep were kind of getting to the point where that herd was dwindling down next to nothing, and it was a habitat problem. Encroachment of trees into that, you know, like I said, they need those wide open spaces. $50,000 worth of our money, a lot of federal money went into that project. A lot of slashing and cutting, opening up that timber to make it more suitable habitat. So those are just some of the things that we do. I'm actually putting together our summer newsletter right now, and in there we're going to list all of our funded projects. So we have all of our funded projects going back to 1994 that we'll list in there. So
that's so cool, Andy. I actually need to. Man, that is pretty awesome to hear all those different projects that you guys are doing and what you're doing for the sheep in the state. How do people get to become members of Wild Sheep Foundation? And then, obviously, you said last year you didn't have a banquet. This year, you're not having a banquet. So how do people get involved? Give us some reasons why they should get involved, not only for the sake of wild sheep and how cool they are, but like, for somebody who might not ever have the interest to apply for tags out of state and really cover the gamut of the chances to draw a tag, why do people need to get invested in Wild Sheep Foundation?
You know, Wild Sheep Foundation, we're pretty proud of the fact that we're not limited to helping out wild sheep, right? So our projects, that 97A project, that fencing project, that has saved way more mule deer than it ever will wild sheep. It's kind of one of those things where, I'll speak, kind of in a generic term. And I think it's most conservation organizations are like that, right? They help out other species. Things go, hand in hand. As far as, our organization, it's a chance to dream, chance to look around and see people that have common interests, right? And that's interest in conservation, interest in wild sheep, interest in the outdoors. We also host a Bighorns and Brews pub night annually. Hopefully we'll be able to have it this year, where we send letters to everybody that receives a tag in Washington State, whether it's a ewe tag, a ram tag. We also include mountain goat tags. We invite all those people to come together with our members and our board and talk about wild sheep, those specific areas, the tags that they have, and they can gain some direct knowledge, regarding the area that they have drawn. So, it's just kind of, the ability to give back and kind of pay it forward to those folks. It's super special. Last time we had it was 2019. Had it down to Red's Fly Shop down there in the heart of the Yakima Canyon. If you've ever been down the Yakima Canyon, you've driven past Red's. It's a great facility. They're great people. Very generous. They have donated their facility to us. Actually, it was just texting with Joe, one of the owners, tonight. And he said as long as COVID allows us, we're going to be on for August as well this year. So we're hoping to have a little bit more robust Bighorns and Brews night and do some raffles and stuff like that. You talked about our banquet, and it kills me that we haven't been able to have that thing for the last 2 years. Last year, 2020, we got canceled 3 days before our event. It is not your run-of-the-mill event. I've gone to a lot of fundraisers for, Mule Deer Foundation, National Wild Turkey Federation, you name it. Ours is something very different. We have about 450 people there. We sell out every year. Our raffle program, I'm super proud of. kind of all that high end gear that, that you really want, you drool over and you can't afford, you know what, we have a lot of that stuff, on our raffle. We try to make things attainable for everyone. We have a great live auction. We work with a lot of great outfitters. We have some really cool items. And I think people have a really, really good time, while they're there. It's my goal that, people go there and have a great time, have an opportunity to hang out with a bunch of like-minded people for a night, and then have some opportunities at things that that they really, really want to have, whether that's a Hilleberg tent or a custom rifle, or that sheep of a lifetime where we give away that life member hunt, whether it's a doll sheep up north, stone sheep. We've given away stone sheep hunts, we've given away a desert sheep hunt. So yeah, we give away some fantastic items, and we're really proud of that program.
Man, that's so awesome. When does this typically take place?
Typically, we're the second weekend in March.
Perfect. But you're not having it this year. So what are you doing in replacement to be able to offer people to get involved, opportunities to get involved, and also give back to the foundation?
Yeah, we have our online auction going right now. It probably won't be airing before it's over with. Our ending date is this Saturday the 15th. We have some great items on there. We've held back a few items actually as well. Really hoping to have that Bighorns and Brews pub night come August. So that's gonna be kind of our main fundraising event is this online auction. We also do facilitate the state Rocky Mountain Bighorn raffle. No different than any of the other raffles, the other state raffles administered by us is the big difference. We are allowed to keep 15% of the proceeds from that for our work on that and the marketing that we do on that. So that's another way that you can do a little dreaming and a little bit of funding for us as well. You can go to our website and order those tickets. You have to actually print the form out and mail it in. It's our Rocky Mountain Bighorn raffle. I think it's right there on the front page. Because of Washington gambling laws, that actually has to be filled out and sent via snail mail to us.
Mm. Yeah, because the state of Washington is anti-online bidding. Right?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Yeah, I remember I'm not really into fantasy sports anymore, but when fantasy sports and all that started taking off where you could gamble online, there was a big outroar and uprage about not being able to do that online. So that makes sense. Andy, how can people follow along with Wild Sheep Foundation besides going to the website, which I'll cover again and make sure is in the show notes? How can people follow along with what's going on with you guys?
Yeah, our best way to do that is via Instagram. We're pretty active on Instagram, and you can follow along with us there. So
that's so cool. And then what's next? What's for the future of sheep? I feel like through this conversation, like if it wasn't for the Sheep Foundations of America, there probably wouldn't be wild sheep. And that was just my initial reaction. But how accurate is that statement?
It's very accurate. I wished I had the numbers. If you actually go to the National Wild Sheep Foundation website, somewhere buried in there, I think they actually have the numbers. But the National Wild Sheep Foundation, I think, was founded in 1977. You go back into the mid-70s there. Wild sheep populations throughout North America were pretty abysmal. MOVI kind of, of course, back in those days, they didn't know what MOVI was. But you'd go to Hell's Canyon, for example, and there would be thousands of sheep in Hell's Canyon, if you were, one of the early guys. And then, domestic sheep come in and overhunting, market hunting. A lot of, especially like in Nevada, a lot of those sheep were extirpated by market hunters. They would go out and they would shoot 50, 100 sheep and beat all those miners out there, go, you know, digging in the mines. So that really, really hampered recovery efforts. Through the Wild Sheep Foundation, cooperative funding from us, and also the various state and Providence organizations and government agencies, we've kind of brought those populations back up to a you know, I won't say great number, but we're getting there. You know, we have a lot more sheep and a lot more opportunity to view them, hunt them, and be amongst them than we ever have had before. So we're on the right track. You know, we do have to fight these individual outbreaks of MOV. They happen almost every year somewhere in the Western U.S. or Canada. You know, that's part of the fight. We have to figure out how to navigate that and how to bring those populations back. And, you know, through that disease research and, you know, separation, we'll get there.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. The positivity, put it out there into the universe. And at the end of the day, this is what it is about being a hunter, is that we are not just constantly taking from this earth. We are also giving to it. And it's a circle of life. It's a beautiful thing. Andy, thank you so much for coming on, sharing about your passion with Wild Sheep and Wild Sheep Foundation. Is there anything you feel like we did not cover or we left on the table?
I'll tell you what, man, there's always, always future time to talk. One thing I do want to say is, you know, for those folks that are in Washington, our draw system, it's closes on the 26th. Get those applications in, man. If you don't know what you're doing for sure, you're like, man, I don't know, this is all a little overwhelming. All of our units are great units. They're all great hunts. Throw a dart at the map and roll with it and apply for those hunts. You won't regret it. Never do the points only thing. Always apply. And we'd love to have you as a member.
Oh, love it. Love it. Everybody, Andy Kelso, president of Washington Wild Sheep Foundation, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. Be blessed. And as always, everybody, freedom on and stay soulful. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love it if you could go ahead and give this a rating as well as subscribe. Also, you can check us out on Instagram under the Soulful Hunter Podcast. Make sure to tag us in pictures and posts and use the hashtag Soulful Hunter. To find out more about the Soulful Hunter Podcast, go to soulfulhunter.com and be sure to follow the podcast, as we are going to be bringing you a lot of great information, insight, and changing lives through primal adventure. I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Stay tuned and stay soulful.